Good morning, everyone. Welcome to this Fairbanks City Council regular work session. It's February 4th at 7 a.m. Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll?
Mr. Marnie?
I'm here.
Ms. Sprinkle?
Here.
Mr. Cleaver?
Here.
Ms. Therrien?
Here.
Ms. Tidwell?
Here.
Mr. Ringstad? Mayor Prus?
Here. Okay, first up on the agenda is ordinance number 6304, an ordinance amending the Fairbanks General Code, Chapter 54, Procurement, Sections 54 through 39 and 54 through 241, to clarify the council notification requirement for sole source purchasing. This is advanced to the February 10th meeting. Mike, note that the Disneyland boy is here. It's a wonderful world after all. I was waiting for that all week. Mr. Sanders, you want to bring us through this one, please?
Sure. So this one is just cleaning up some of the code about sole source purchasing. It's essentially, quarterly, Christina Roulette will come in and give you guys an update on any sole sourcing that we do that's beyond the normal limits. And other than that, it's no big change. It's just cleaning up the language.
Questions? Seeing none, we'll move on to Ordinance 6305, an ordinance amending Fairbanks General Code, Section 70 through 162, to ensure visible and safe traffic intersections and amending the city schedule of fees and charges for services. Bob, want to come up and bring us through this, please? And we have a proposed substitute, actually. Okay.
Good morning, Mayor, Council. Yeah, this is really about site triangles at intersections, of course. And there was some discussion at the last council meeting about grandfather clauses and also the borough code, you know, what the borough code has in there for what they call site visibility at intersections. So I sent out to Danny for distribution to the council some thoughts I had about grandfather clauses. And grandfather clause, I wouldn't think would be a reason to allow an unsafe condition to continue. There's examples like that in the code. If you were going to work on your electrical service and you had a deficient grounding, you would be required to upgrade that to the modern code. So in the same instance, if you have a intersection, let's say that has a fence that was there for 30 years, things could change at that intersection. You know, with school closures, there could be now a new route for safe routes to school. Children could be walking down the sidewalk, or the volume of the roadway could change. Certainly cars, smaller, maybe driving faster, people distracted using cell phones. There's lots of things, accident history. Something could change at that intersection where once that fence could be allowed, now it really is more of a liability to the city. So, I mean, I'm addressing some concerns at the last council meeting. I still think the ordinance, the way it's written, is appropriate, where we're not just removing trees or brush from the site triangle, but we're using any obstruction that blocks your site. And that's really the gist of this ordinance.
Yes, Mr. Attorney.
At the last discussion, council had asked the question about whether or not it would be appropriate to have a grandfather clause or a non-conforming clause. The borough has some language in their code about non-conforming and grandfather situations. But you have to balance, as your city engineer is telling you, the risk from continuing an obstruction versus having the obstruction there or tearing it down. And so one of the things that we needed to talk with council this morning about is basically your will, your direction. If you want to incorporate a non-conforming grandfather clause into this, we can write that into it. If not, then we still need to go back and modify the ordinance that you have in front of you. Mr. Clearworth pointed out last time, like, you know, it doesn't necessarily make sense that a fence sticking out too far is under the, you know, trees planted too close to the sidewalk section of the code. So we'd have to tweak it if you want, if you do not want a grandfather clause. If you do want a grandfather clause, either way, we just need to know what council wants to do.
Ms. Sprinkle.
I don't know who answers this, but if I had a corner that caused a lot of trouble, I've had a couple accidents, does that flag it for you? I mean, I don't know how you track something like this anyway.
Accident history is a consideration when you're looking at traffic control. If you know, I also asked for distribution to the council of the borough's picture, where they have equal distance triangles. And also I sent to the council the one that I did most recently for Cowles. Okay, there's two pictures. This, that equilateral side triangle, I really don't know exactly what they were thinking, because that assumes both roads are exactly the same in width and in volume and in speed and also in traffic control. You know, you can see on Cowles, like the one I drew, Cowles, the traffic moves straight through with the side streets stop. So you would not have an equal distance side triangle. The legs would not be the same. There's no way they could be. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe you're not understanding that, but if I come to a stop on 8th Avenue, I need to be able to see both ways up and down Cowles. So that length of that sight distance on Cowles is much longer than the one on 8th Avenue. The legs are not equal. So to follow that, when I do a sight triangle, I use this book right here. This is the national standard. You know, there's 30 pages in there how to do it. We're not going to get into that at all. But I would never use this. I mean, if I did, and it was an accident, you know, the first thing the board of engineers would say, why'd you use this? Well, it's a borough standard. Well, I can't use that. I know better. I got to use this. So that's why this site triangle on Cowles looks different than this. So if we defer to the borough standard, I would say we're in error. I definitely would be in an error. And council can do it.
Would you have any professional repercussion by certifying anything that you knew was in it?
Well, I would never do that, Mayor. I mean, I would have to design it as according to that book, and then if the council overrode me, that's fine, because the council could defend me in a civil case, but who would defend me against the Board of Engineers to say, well, you didn't do it the way you're supposed to, we're going to suspend your license, right? I mean, I don't want to make a big deal out of this, but that's what you're going down when you say, well, we're going to adopt the borough code and Bob, you're going to follow it. Well, I would just write down, no, I disagree, and you can do what you want.
Ms. Sprinkle.
There's a property on 5th and Cowles, has the wind chimes all around the porch. Yeah. And I noticed that they have taken their fence line and done a
45.
Yeah, they cut it off so that I can actually see around there at that very point. I can see coming and going. I live on a place where the 6th and Noble, the funeral home, has a big, tall hedge that is very uncomfortable to pull in. I'm in a truck, even, and I can barely get around it. So I'm with you on this one. It's really scary to go through places like that with the cars. That's a very well-traveled road. And I would have the accident via my fault, right?
Well,
it wouldn't be the fence, it would be the hedge.
You could defend yourself, you know, and if there was a complaint to the city that this was a site triangle that was, this obstruction is blocking the site triangle, and they went to the city and they said, does this meet the site distance? I would say no.
But then we decided
not to do anything about it, and there was an accident. Tom can tell you what would happen.
Tom?
Mr. Clearworth, then Mr. Marnie.
Tom, the email you sent us the other day had borough code in there and the clauses on grandfather rights. That's area wide, right?
Yes. Okay.
So if we have rules and regs that are different than the borough's rules and regs, we can legally make them stricter than the borough, but not looser? How does that work?
That's correct.
Well, I would say when there's a, normally, when there's a conflict between codes, the more stringent one would override. So I never use this for site distance triangle when I'm designing the road. I always use the one I'm supposed to use. So this has never been an issue before. I've mentioned it to them, and it, you know, maybe it, if you had two roads were exactly the same and they both came in at 45-degree angles, never mind a skewed intersection, because that throws the site distance off too. The way it works is the more stringent regulation overrides, and we follow the national standard when we're designing roads.
We've had those national standards for quite a while, so if I'm a property owner building a house and I put up a fence, which is in compliance with the borough, but does the building department say, oh, wait a minute, you can't put up that fence while it's being constructed? Are they going to go in there and do that when it's first being built? Or do they not do that?
Right now?
Yeah.
They would be following the national standards that are applicable now.
How long have we had those standards?
The geometric design, this was 2011. I mean, they came out like 100 years ago when we first started driving cars, and they're always been updated about every 15 years. There's a 2018 out right now ready for adoption.
But if they've been around that long, then how come those tall, well, the fences that are in violation were built and nobody called them on it?
Well, they might have been driving Model Ts at that time, 20 miles an hour. And so... Well, I think no, the standards change, the safety issues change as things develop. That's why you have the manual that's always updated every decade or so.
Well, my problem with it is if I'm a landowner and I were in this predicament and I put thousands and thousands of bucks into a fence, along comes the city and says, we don't like your fence. It's not in compliance with this book here. And you say, well... It seemed to be okay when I put it up. I didn't have anybody yelling at me from the borough or the city at the time. And now you come along and say, no, it doesn't work anymore. Are you going to pay for my new fence? Or are you just going to make me tear it down and lose my investment in it?
I would say it depends. Again, depends on, is it, okay, we're talking about a fence. Is the fence 30 years old and it's ready to fall down anyway? Is it a new fence that's going up right now and they just didn't check the code? You know, that's happened. You know, when I did this fence on Cal's, that person knew to ask about, hey, when I'm on Cal's, I can't see, where's my fence supposed to go? So we told them.
If they did that in violation, then I have no sympathy for them. But if I put it up 10 years ago or something and nothing was said, then I have a little more sympathy for that.
I agree. And it's not one size fits all, but the real question is, do you use grandfather code to allow an unsafe condition? How much risk does the city want to take when you know you're in violation of the standard? Now, maybe the fence slipped through, but...
Ms. Therrien, do you have a question?
Yes. I agree with what's been said that we shouldn't have grandfather clauses, but I'm curious as to how we're going to enforce this if it passes. And maybe Tom could clue us in on that a little bit. Are we going to send a letter to every non-conforming intersection owner?
Thank you, Councilmember Therrien, for the question. My purpose in sharing the borough's code with you was just to illustrate that they have set up a administrative review. So what happens is a non-conforming fence or obstruction is identified. That person gets a notice of non-conformity that says, hey, your fill in the blank is sticking out too far. An administrative review is set up. That administrative panel would likely include the mayor, you know, his designee, the city engineer, whoever would be on that administrative panel. That property owner would come forward and say, hey, this fence has been here for 30 years, or I just built this fence and it cost me $10,000 or whatever. the administrative panel would be able to hear the facts of that particular case and be able to maybe modify, you know, the fence slightly, or maybe put a mirror up, or maybe change the intersection, whatever is recommended, so that we can balance these competing interests of private property owner rights versus safety at that intersection. Ultimately, your city engineer is correct. There is a standard, and I think the goal should be to conform to that standard, but I think there are a lot of ways to get there, and that's that administrative review would set that up and safeguard the procedural due process rights for the private property owner.
Mr. Marnie, then Ms. Sprinkle, then Mr. Ringstad.
I wasn't finished, okay, Mayor.
Go ahead, Valerie.
It's just I've gone down Barnett and gone through all the little city streets going to Cowles, and Cowles is a mess. And I agree that we need to do something, and I am concerned about the liability to the city. I like what Thomas said about the administrative review, so I would support that.
Thank you, Valerie. Mr. Marnie.
Well, my question is, Public Works in the past has been most kind to cut hedges and trees and kind of clean that stuff up on the city's dime. Is that still going to be the case?
I would think so. We're talking about on the city side, meaning in the right of way. The site triangle occupies not only the right of way, but a portion of the private property.
Okay.
So, yeah, there's many times where we get reports about site distance issues. The first thing we do is clear the right of way because that's ours. We can clear the right of way. And then if the site triangle gets into private property, then we just don't go in there and clear it. We talk about it with the property owner, and you know, it's not a directive necessarily. Say, hey, look, you see the problem. I show them. I take them out into the street, say, we can't see. And they say, okay, fine, yeah, we'll clear it. It really doesn't turn into that big of an issue.
Thank you.
Ms. Sprinkle.
First of all, I have two questions. Do we permit fences?
Permit fences?
You have to get a permit to put a big fence up.
I think, I don't know for sure, but if you are in the right-of-way, it has to be permitted. Anything in the right-of-way gets permitted by the city engineer. On private property, I would defer to Christoph.
Okay. That was my first question. And as written, it comes down to a case-by-case to the mayor. If something happens, the mayor's a backstop. He can...
I think that's
process,
a case
makes me
every fun. Time with everything that
yeah,
I
yeah.
know of.
Okay, because I would lean to safety over someone with a 50-year-old fence, I guess. Thank you.
Mr. Ringstad.
So we've been talking about hedges and fences. We've got a number of buildings that have been there since I started driving that go right up on a corner to the sidewalk on both sides. And they're as bad as anything else. So if we write stuff in here without a grandfather clause, somebody's going to get hurt and say the city should have made them tear the building down? I mean, it's not about that. It's cheap to fix a fence in the bigger scheme of things, but we've got several expensive buildings that if you write something that says one size fits all, right, it's not going to work. I'd rather... find another way, give grandfather rights, I think, by somebody that's been there for longer than most of us have been in this town, and tell them, no, you can't have that building anymore. I mean, that's just taking people's rights away. That's a condemnation, and the city's going to pay for the building. You know, so I think we've got to be careful about that in trying to address some of these. I like your angle of sight. That's what it should be. That's why you got your book, and the book was written, right? I think we need to be careful. We don't try and get our laws written so tight that we don't get judgment. And I think that's why we pay him the big bucks, so he can use his judgment.
Mayor, can I make a quick comment on that?
Council, I appreciate everything you've said. And the most incredible thing about Fairbanks is there is no one size that'll ever fit all. So basically what I'm going to do is I'm going to pull this. I'm going to review it. dig deeper into it and put in a system of administrative review. You know, you're going to have, I'd never ask anyone to remove a structure. You know, you have structures built in 1905 that you're looking around in the downtown, but hedges, fences, things like that. So I'm gonna pull this and work on it a little bit, give John a call, give Jerry a call. Each one of you talk with you. Hopefully I don't break any law, Madam Clerk. But anyway, I think you've brought up a lot of good questions, and we need to work on this. We're Fairbanks. There is no one size that'll ever fit all. So we'll move on.
Just a note, Mayor, that ordinance has been advanced to Monday's council meeting. So at Monday's council meeting, it would need to, if you'd like it to be postponed, maybe the council would.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, next up is Ordinance 6306, an ordinance amending Fairbanks General Code Section 70-161 and the local amendments to the 2018 International Fire Code adopted by reference at Fairbanks General Code Section 30-32 and amending the city fee schedule fees and charges for services to ensure access to fire hydrants. Chief Cacaro, come on up.
We had so much fun with fences, but though we talk about fire hydrants for a while, so.
Would you bring us through this one, sir?
Sure. Good morning, Mayor, Council. Thanks for your attention to this. This kind of came up from several projects that I think the last ordinance were initially all kind of combined, and then we felt it was more appropriate to split these out. So basically, from my understanding, there was a hydrant or two in our area that were very, very buried in snow, probably more than just your normal amount of snow that you would see. So during conversations with other code changes, we thought it would be appropriate to ask the council to add in specific language into the General Code Chapter 70, Article 4 for Public Streets, Section 70-161. You can see that in Item B there where they just added or fire hydrants when it's unlawful for a person to move snow or ice and all that good stuff to that. A little bit farther down, this will fall under the Director of Public Works preview to go out and enforce, or whoever they designate in the future to do that work as well. And then to make all that code and references all join together, our International Fire Code that was adopted, the 2018 version, Section 507 specifically speaks to fire protection, water supplies, and obstructions. So that would cover fire hydrants, fire department connections, or anything else to assist the fire department in either gaining water access or putting water into a building. And for obvious reasons, we don't want to have that covered up with 54 feet of snow because it takes a long time to dig that out with a little shovel and a fire truck. So I think these are a little bit easier, more streamlined. You know, obviously you don't want to have someone, you know, snow blowing or snow plowing all the snow from their property on over top of a hydrant that's there for not only their use, but for the entire area's use to help with fire prevention.
Questions? Mr. Marney, then Mr. Cleworth.
Well, I live in an older neighborhood, and, you know, 20 years ago, everybody shoveled their sidewalks and but things have changed. You know, we've got rentals in the neighborhood, which often causes people not to care any longer. So under Section 70-161, Item A, I don't know how this can be regulated. It says here that you must shovel your walk and remove ice and can't put it in the street and all that, but how are we going to police that?
Well, fortunately, this was written that the Public Works Director has to sort that out. So we'll let Jeremiah decide how he's going to police that. I will say that that's no change to this code. That's current language. The only things that are changed are bolded and underlined in the reference material that you have. So that's been on the books for quite some time. So how that's been enforced up till now is a good question. That's not inside of the fire department to look over.
Mr. Chard, would you please chime in here, please?
And Mr. Marney, that language in particular is very important to the city. It got me out of a million, or got us out of $1 million lawsuit, literally that section. So I would recommend we keep that in there.
Mr. Clearworth.
Well, in the downtown area, when you shovel to the curb. And the in residential areas, it's the same. You have the right to put it to the curb. Technically, that's in the street. But what you do not have the right is to push it out into the middle of the street. And that's when Public Works comes after you, is putting a dump right there in the middle. But on the curb, that's the only place you have, and that's legal. So you have that right. My only concern with this, and I expressed it the other night, was on the second page under E. At the end, it says we're giving somebody 24 hours to make a change. What?
It's a proposed substitute.
Oh, is that done? I'm sorry.
We took your advice and gave him a week.
Okay. Just another question for you. Do you folks go out and clean off fire hydrants from time to time yourselves?
We do not. Not unless we're in an emergency response mode.
Didn't the fire department used to do some of that?
We talked about this. We had a few calls along the way over at the fire department. I went back to a couple of members that have been here for quite a long time. There have been instances where the fire department went out in the past to help community members with that. We don't own the fire hydrants. We don't own the property that the fire hydrants are on necessarily. I mean, they're in the right of way. I know that a lot of times. So over the last several years, that practice has pretty much ended from my understanding. But I'm sure if you go back far enough that was part of the services. But with so many hydrants, with so many snow buildups, like that would literally be a full-time job is to go out and clear hydrants during big snow events.
Ms. Tidwell.
I'm looking at like the fiscal note on here. It says that we have 6 to 12 violations around that. Do we not? Because doesn't the fee structure, I mean, the person responsible for the violation is supposed to be paying for that. Do we normally do this and not have people pay? Or why is there a cost?
Well, good question. We'll figure that one out. 3,000. Go ahead, Mr. Chardon.
I am not speaking in my wheelhouse here, but I think that cost was the work that Public Works is currently doing. It was based on that and projected out to figure out like how many they were going to do. But Margarita might be able to help too.
On your schedule of fees, we're adding obstructing a fire hydrant, whereas in before that was not a part of the fine. So in my conversations with the Public Works Director, how many incidents we've had in the past, I just based it on what that fee might be for, based on those number of incidents.
So this wouldn't be like an additional cost for us? Like we would essentially be billing that out?
Correct.
With this?
It's a reimbursement.
Yes. It would be reimbursing whatever the cost is for the Public Works Department.
Mr. Marney.
So my question is, are we going to let the public know that we're doing this?
Well, what happens is you let them know when there's a big violation there. Okay. And you ask them to take care of it.
And then they come see you.
If they don't take care of it, then Jeremiah sends out a front-end loader and takes care of it, and we bill them. But they are given notice, and now instead of the 24 hours, they'll be given 7 days to take care of the violation, which should be plenty of time. And I think we've only had this winter one time where we've had to bring out a front-end loader. Usually an owner takes care of it promptly. And we're pretty, you know, we're not regimented like it's 24 hours, get this done. We're just not that way.
Okay.
You know, Jeremiah and his crew works very well with them.
Boy.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mr. Clearworth.
What happens if this hydrant is on public property? If it's sitting on a federal property or something like that, and they have moved snow and they've blocked it, are we going to go after them too?
Well, of course we are. I can't wait to see the feds.
Okay, I just want equal treatment for everybody.
Any other questions? That's Jared's wheelhouse there. Thank you, Chief. Yes, sir.
Just a quick note about the proposed change from 24 hours to a week. One thing that this would do, and I just want to make sure you're aware of it, is, for example, yesterday we did a snow violation notice to a pair of neighbors over off Market Street that had pushed the snow from their combined driveway and parking areas between the properties along the street, and they have blocked three quarters of the southbound lane. So this 70... you know, this whole chapter 70 section covers one duration of time, one assessment of penalties, one fine for every type of condition, right? So we have to also think about how long do we want to give these people to clean up an actual safety hazard that's present and now we're blocking a lane of traffic in a narrow street. Do we really want to give them an entire week to clean that up? And in that case, are we opening ourselves up for some kind of problem from us leaving it there as something that the citizen needs to handle or we will bill? So that's the balance that I think that we need to find. That's all.
Mr. Clearworth.
When I originally looked at that, I wasn't looking at putting in language like a week. I was looking at putting in language such as an agreement between the Director of Public Works and the party. I mean, if you make a phone call to them and you don't get an answer and you leave it on their phone, and they don't get it, nothing's happening in 24 hours, and you're going to be after them, and they're going to come back and say, oh, wait a minute here, I never got a phone call. Yeah, I think I left a message on your home phone or something. Why don't you check the home phone? Why don't you call the cell phone? And on and on, and it puts us in an awkward spot. But it takes time for you or whoever is doing it to make contact with them. And 24 hours, if you contact me, and I've got 24 hours to get a front end loader or something over there, I don't know if I can do that. I mean, most people can't. So I think there needs to be some kind of a latitude there between you or the public works director as to a time frame where they feel that you should get it done and I'm giving you ample time to do it. I just wanted some leeway there. 24 hours has no leeway. It's dead set.
Very tight, yes. And just for reference with kind of what Jeremiah and myself have kind of worked with. Oftentimes we've been posting snow violations on Thursday or Friday, just kind of the way things have worked out this winter, which gives the citizen the entire weekend to correct the issue. And then we come back and check it on, you know, Monday afternoon or so in the normal course of work. So that's been a pretty common thing that we've done. And the difference being the stuff that's a little bit more immediate, in such as the case from yesterday, where no, this needs to get posted immediately because it's an actual safety hazard. It's not someone annoying the city by pushing snow into it and making public works make an extra run. You know, it's a different instance.
So would you think it'd be okay to change the language so that you would have some kind of discretion rather than a finite period of time? That there be an agreement? I mean, somehow you have to make contact with these people, and if you don't make contact, it's not fair to them.
If I was going to do it myself, I would put something along the lines of 24 hours unless an accommodation is reached with the public works director or something along that line is kind of where my brain goes, you know, right off the cuff.
And that communication has to take place.
I would put it on the citizen to reach out in that case. I wouldn't have it to where it's the city's responsibility to keep chasing after.
How are you going to notify them that they can absolutely get that message within 24 hours?
Back it on their door.
Yeah, we have been doing, yeah, notices on their door or in their mailbox.
You know, Jerry, you're making up excuses for people doing negligent things.
And to be
and,
reality,
and there's a way that we can go about.
I disagree.
In communication with them.
We work for them, and yeah. We should give them some accommodation rather than just saying it's right
well.
Now 24
Mr.
hours.
Mr. Ringstead.
Mayor, when you cut off council members, that's not real polite.
I thought you were done. Sorry. Go ahead. Mr. Clayworth, go ahead. Okay. Mr. Engstead.
So the way I would interpret this, it says you have to have it done in 7 days. If you've got an immediate problem where they're blocking a lane, I mean, you contact them and say, man, we got to get this cleaned up like now. It doesn't say they have to wait 7 days. They can go do it today. Or you could take the other approach and say, if it isn't cleaned by tomorrow morning, I'm going to take a bucket loader and put all the snow back in your driveway. You know, I mean, there's a way you can get this done if you want to. But I agree with Jerry's concern. There are a lot of people in Fairbanks that aren't at home. You can't post to the door. They're not, you know, they're in Hawaii. They're not going to see it for a week. So this give says it needs to be done within 7 days. Doesn't mean you can push that. And I think that's to your judgment when it's a safety issue and when it's just we need to get it done. And I trust your judgment to make that call. And how much pressure you want to put on. I mean, I think once you explain to them, you're blocking traffic, man. You know, you're going to have your whole neighborhood mad at you pretty quick. You know, and I think you can get them to understand that and deal with it. So I think that with the flexibility.
Mr. Ring said that's usually what happens. Neighborhoods.
Mayor, this is Valerie, if I could make a comment.
Certainly, then, Ms. Sprinkle.
Okay. This is only with regard to fire hydrants, as I understand it at this time. And I think a compromise of maybe 3 days after posting on their door would resolve it. I think 7 days is way too long for a fire hydrant to remain unable to be used by the fire department. And if we want to deal with snow blocking roads, I think we need a different ordinance.
Well, we have the block the snow in this one right now, section 70-161A.
Okay. So, well, then I think that might need a shorter period of time as opposed to the fire hydrants, but they're both important issues. I think maybe 48 hours at the most.
Yeah, we can amend this at our city council meeting. So think about that, council, on how you'd want to amend this to accommodate different aspects of it. Ms. Sprinkle.
All right, I just want to make sure, though, if the road is being blocked by whatever's happened here, Public Works is not going to give it a 7-day wait. They're going to clear it and then build a guy, right?
That is not the way that the code is written to be able to charge the citizen. Currently, if we clear it without posting it, we can't charge the citizen is my understanding of code.
So if you hang on something on the door handle or try to make the phone call and you still haven't heard, then the 7 days you clear it up. Is that what I'm hearing?
Currently, it's within 24 hours of the notice, but it looks like that's what's on in front of you, yes.
And in my head, if somebody's away, as John's worried about, somebody's away, they're not pushing the snow into the fire hydrant. They're not even there. But it would be the neighbor?
The neighbor or their plow company, you know, okay. Whether it's, you know, an actual company or their buddy who doesn't know the code. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And if, to make it clear, if we can't determine which property has moved the snow to be cause of violation, then I don't post it. Public Works and I will talk with each other to get it cleaned up, but we don't post a violation if we're not absolutely sure.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair, appreciate it. Okay. We're gonna move on to ordinance 6307, ordinance reestablishing an incentive bonus program with the Fairbanks Police Department for recruiting and hiring. Okay. Mr. Sanders, you want to bring us through this?
Yes, this is the same bonus that's currently established for the police department. It just expired, and we're just looking to renew it.
Ms. Bell, is there any words of wisdom from you?
I do not have any other item to add to this ordinance.
Any questions from the council, Mr. Marnie?
So if we hire somebody, say, in May on this, we have a lateral. Do we have the funds? Does the department have the funds?
The department has the funds because they are not fully staffed at this time.
Okay. So it doesn't wait till the end of the year?
No, it doesn't wait until the end of the year. I look. When they have a new hire, the HR usually coordinate with me whether or not we have the funds available, the savings, and I say yes or no. Well, most of the time it's been yes because they haven't been fully staffed. And then they will offer that bonus.
Thank you.
Mr. Engstad.
So, Margarita, to pay for this, it comes out of the salary savings, right? So the next step then comes to me that, okay, at the end of the year, we do our salary savings bonuses. Does this come out before we determine bonuses or after?
Yes, before. When we get to the end of the year, I analyze how many employees we've given bonuses to, because this requires half when they're after they complete field training, and then the other half so many years down the road. So I accrue it at that time.
So it's encumbered.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ms. Therrien.
Yes, I was looking at the note, and it said that we had done 26 laterals, but only 13 remained. So is it clear that we've gotten some of that money back?
Yes, we did receive some funds. You've had laterals that have completed that time frame before they resigned. And then you have some that have left very close to the very, close to the end of that time period. But we have refunded $31,000 of the funds that we paid through this program. About $31,000 was refunded.
Ms. Sprinkle.
Oh, sorry.
Mr. Engstad. Your light's on. Okay. Any other questions? We'll move on. Resolution 5162, a resolution authorizing City of Fairbanks to apply for funds from fiscal year 2026 congressionally directed spending CDS appropriations for medical ambulance bus not introduced.
Did we skip 6308?
Oh, probably did. Sorry about that. Yes, we did. Thank you. We'll go back to Ordinance 6308, an ordinance reestablishing an incentive bonus program for Fairbanks Emergency Communications Center and recruitment and hiring. So, Mr. Sanders, want to bring us through this?
Sure. This is very much like the one before. This is just reestablishing a longstanding bonus that we've had for lateral dispatchers. It's basically the same thing that we've had for a few years. It expired, and we're trying to bring it back. And the one last thing is, at first we weren't going to do this, but Chrissy does think that she might be able to get somebody from this. So we thought that it was worth bringing back.
Ms. Bell, any additional comments?
I have none. The fiscal note does provide information about the history of the program, how many laterals we received, and how many retained to date.
Yeah. Ms. Therrien.
Yes, it's just really interesting to me that a dispatcher only gets a $15,000 bonus versus a police officer that gets $60,000. And I know it costs more to train someone, but it just seems we're having as much problems getting dispatchers as maybe Christy could address that at the next meeting as to whether or not the $15,000 should be increased or not.
Christy, you want to chime in, please?
So the history behind ours is that I don't want to give money to have somebody come to our agency. I'm to over-incentivize them to come. I am only giving them the money that they save our department by coming already trained. And they have to have certain things, because in the state of Alaska, we don't have certain certificates that go from dispatcher to dispatcher. So if they meet some minimum things that we in our center currently use, I'm just passing savings on to them. I don't want to create any animosity between dispatchers and everything else. So I am just giving them the money that they saved me in already knowing some stuff. That's all we're trying to do.
Ms. Sprinkle.
Christy, how much does it cost to train an emergency call taker?
Altogether, that's hard to say from person to person. Some people pick it up very quick, but it's going to be about 9 months because it's the same as an officer in a little bit, because they go to an academy for 4 months and then they come to on duty for 4 months. We're just doing it all in-house. We're trying as many ways to get it shorter, as shortest as possible. But the $15,000 is basically I'm not paying a trainer as long that FTO pay and saving that money with that trainer.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to figure out is if they've been trained elsewhere and they come to the city and they've got their credentials and they know what they're doing, is $15,000 enough? Have they, you know, are they worth more in the training they already have?
So they don't technically have credentials. We probably have one of the highest levels of actual training liability doing pro QA. You go to the state troopers, they dispatch just police. They don't have any fire and EMS. So if I got a trooper dispatcher coming over, I still have to teach them fire and EMS. So they still have some, and I still have to pay for some classes. It depends on exactly what they're trained in. But for us, the $15,000 also makes it so we don't have any conflicts between people in the room that know the job, that came in and learned the job, versus those that are getting this high paycheck to come in and still have to be trained and know our way.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Engstead.
Established in 2019, extended in 2022, amended in 2023. When did we stop doing this?
Sunset on December 31st.
24.
24, so just, you know, a couple weeks.
Oh, okay.
And Mr. Marney.
So, Ms. Bell, wasn't this at $30,000 prior?
No, it's always been at $15,000.
Okay, any other questions?
Yeah, this is Valerie one more time. So this helps costs, but we don't have any real incentive for them to come to us the way that the police department, or am I misunderstanding, as opposed to, you know, a recruitment issue?
For me, correct. I don't want somebody to come to me for 3 years and then turn around, take the money, and then go to AST or go back to another agency. I'm not wanting that. I want them to come to our agency because they want to be at our agency.
Mr. Mayor, you
that
have a...
other part is just to help us.
Mr. Mayor, you have a question or want to chime in?
No, Christy hit the nail on the head. This is a department that realistically we struggle to get people through training for them to actually be able to do the job. This isn't a department that I have the same issues with actual recruitment like FPD.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Any other questions? Seeing none, we'll now go to resolution 5126, a resolution authorizing the city of Fairbanks to apply for funds from the fiscal year 2026 congressionally directed spending CDS appropriations for medical ambulance bus. Chief, come on up. And I thought we got this last year, but we didn't get it last year. What happened?
I thought we did too. That's a really good question that only people higher up in the federal government can probably answer, unless Mike knows. Mike knows everybody. Mike knows the answer. Stand by.
I mean, we still may have gotten this last year, but we won't know until March, is my understanding. And we have to get Stacy from Senator Murkowski's office said that that we should go ahead and put in because the CDS funding application is due before we would know if we got it from last year.
So February, if we, what, 15th?
What's that?
Do February 15th?
Yeah, yes, sir. I believe so. So if we don't if we don't put it in this year and we didn't get it, we won't know in time. So this way, if we did get it, which we think that we might have, then we can just, you know, not apply for, you know, not accept the funds this time.
Sounds about normal.
Sounds like governmental.
Sounds right on par, doesn't it?
Mr. Marnie.
So do we have the housing for this warm storage?
Yeah, I think we'll be able to find room for this apparatus once it arrives, so we don't let it sit outside and freeze and fall apart. And Jeremiah's probably saying no, but I say yes, because we're all a big team.
He's laughing. We kicked out some borough emergency.
I just want a couple of bays in the fire department building. That's all I asked for.
We found a place out at the Public Works where we had borough emergency response equipment that they'd been asked for 2 years to take it. We finally got it out of there, and Jeremiah's already requisitioned it, but he has to give it back if we're successful at this.
We can share.
Turf war.
Me and Jeremiah work really well together. I'm sure we can work out a deal.
Ms. Sprinkle.
So this is just outright money we're looking for. We're not trying to match this. Is that correct?
This is all congressional funded, so there wouldn't be any matches that I'm aware of.
All right, thank you.
Ms. Therrien.
I know that our president has frozen all the transfers of money to municipalities and cities like ourselves. Do we have any idea whether or not the previous one that we think we got is actually going to come to us?
I would say that in discussions with the senator's office when I visit them, we'll be finding out more about that. Every administration changes and does different things, as I did here when I became mayor. So we'll work through it. We'll see what happens. And I don't think that they're going to cut funding for an ambulance bus in Fairbanks, Alaska. They might take a while to reapprove it, my personal thoughts.
Okay, you'll keep us posted.
Oh, yes, yeah. You know, we got this in the last administration, but we didn't get it. So we're applying for it again in the new administration to see if we get it again. So
okay.
We're in the government bureaucracy. Thank you, Chief. Okay, then we have Ordinance 6309, an ordinance amending the 2025 Operating Capital and Fairbanks Transportation Center budgets for the first time. Ms. Bell, you want to bring us through this?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. If you'll turn with me to page 2 of ordinance, we'll kind of start off looking at the numbers and the impact before we get into the details behind the numbers. The first column I would like to call to your attention is the approved council appropriation. You'll notice there's an increase and a decrease, and then it's a proposed council. So if you go to that bottom line on the total revenue appropriation, you'll see we're looking at a decrease of $4.88 million. It's $4,839,395. Decrease with the ending revenue appropriation of $43.3 million. If you go down to the next set of lines, a total expenditure appropriation, you'll see we're moving for $46.4 million with an increase of $274,000 or close rounding at $275,000. And we're going to end the year with total expenditure appropriation of $46.7 million. Now, I want to spend some time in the fund balance section to kind of explain where some of these numbers are coming from. Under the approved council appropriation, there is a change in the number of unassigned fund balance. We are about 90% done with the audit. There might be slight changes in this number, but we know that we will have an excess of over $4.9 million than what we had projected for the end of last year. And a lot of that is for salary savings and operating costs were not as high as anticipated. You'll note under that same column that the other changes to the budget, we ended at $1.7 million. And I understand that you had ratified a contract with PSEA, but I know that there are still things that are happening with that contract, and that is not reflected in that number. So we're looking at an estimated unassigned fund balance of 20.8 million. So if you look in the second column of increase and decrease, notice the prior year encumbrances. And what that means is that we have purchase orders that are outstanding. We have purchase orders that we've submitted to vendors that were not completed by 2024. And in order, when those open purchase orders are available at 12/31, they have to roll over to the next year so that we can spend it. And the way the budget is written is it's written from January to December. You as a council had approved 46.5 million, but these encumbrances are increasing the budget. So what you're doing today with some of the encumbrance carry forward is authorizing those funds to move over. So that came to $274,662. And if you notice, that is the same amount that you have in expenditures total. The next one is the transfers to other funds. You're transferring the surplus that you have from the prior year into the capital fund, and we'll get into details about where those numbers are coming from. And then you have your estimated unassigned fund balance change of 5.1 million. But if we go to that last column, we'll see that out of that 19 million that we are projecting at the end of the year, 274,662 are for encumbrances, 4.8 is for our transfers, and our other changes in the budget remains the same for an estimated unassigned fund balance of 15.6 million. So that's on the general fund side. Any questions before I move into the capital fund? When we go to the capital fund side and we go down to that total revenue appropriation, you'll see a 2.2 million is what you approved revenue-wise at the budget. After we finalize the budget for 2025, you'll see the transfers coming in. There's a slight change in a permanent fund, and I'll talk about that. And it's a slight change on both sides. We'll talk about when we get to the details. But you'll see that increase of 4.5 million. You'll see a total of 6.7 for the capital fund. When we're looking at the expenditure side, you appropriated at, after we finished the budget at 10.4 million. And then you'll see an increase of 5.3 million. And then we have an ending of 15.7 million in expenditures for the capital fund. Now let's take a look at that fund balance section because there's a lot going on with what's happening. Notice that we have 21.3 million in the fund balance of what we're projecting. And as I mentioned earlier, we're very close, 95% done with the audit. This is a $7 million increase from what we anticipated to end last year. And a part of that reason is we have encumbrances, which are open purchase orders that we have for projects that are kind of multi-year in a way that are going to carry over to this year through open purchase order and the amount of 3.7, almost 3.8 million. It's in that middle column there. We have prior year reappropriations, which there are some projects that they thought they would have them completed by December. The funds were not encumbered, but the departments would like to keep those funds that are available that you originally budgeted for next year. That's what we call reappropriation for this year. So in 2024, you said you can have $500,000 for this project. They weren't quite finished with the project, but they still had some funds left over. So now we have to reappropriate it because there was not a purchase order for them. And that totaled 1.3 million. And then we had transfer from the other fund. You see that there. and you see a change in the budget, which means that there's a new project that we want to bring or increase in some projects, totaling $185,000. So when we look at everything for the capital fund, we're showing an estimated fund balance starting at 13.1, that's, and we are have increases of 800,000, and we are anticipating a 12.3 for the ending balance. And of that 12.3, 6.8 of it is unassigned. And that is with the proposed changes. Something new this year is we budgeted the transportation center, and this is on page 4. And you'll see there's a transfer we're proposing from the general fund for costs for property repair and placement at the park and garage, totaling $270,000. So that's what you see there. Note that the fund balance for this fund kind of decreased, and that's due to depreciation. For that decrease, if you were looking at it from last year, from the ordinance that we proposed. Now, with that, let's go into the details. Thinking of encumbrances, our reappropriation, and some of those things, but let's look at the general fund. When we're talking about the last year, the Finance Committee made a recommendation that interest income and sale of assets go back to the capital fund at the beginning of the year, and that totaled $1.51 million in interest income and sale of assets. The mayor's proposing to transfer $500,000 from capital fund for fire apparatus. As I mentioned, there were some changes in that department after we closed out part of the year, after we closed out the year. So it is no longer at zero, but it is still very low. And if we had to buy an apparatus today, we would need more funds for it. But this is a start to have those funds available for fire apparatus. The mayor's proposing a $2.49 million in transfer to the capital fund. To cover the cost for the projects in the transportation center fund, there is that $270,000 transfer to the transportation center fund. And then you'll notice there is a decrease in the permanent fund transfer. And I want to speak a little bit about that. Overall, the transfer from the permanent fund increased by $146,000. When I prepared the budget, I prepared it in September. And in September, the permanent fund had $9 million more than what it had at the end of the year. And most of that was not realized gains. It was basically unrealized, a change in the value of the portfolio. So although it looks like our permanent fund transfer decreased, overall it increased by $146,000 from the prior year. It's just lower than what our budgeted amount was. And that's because it went down from September to December. So I just wanted to kind of explain that piece of it while you're showing that decrease. This is a change. The next one is expenditure. You'll notice it's a total of zero, but what the mayor is proposing that we increase salary and benefits for one full-time laborer and one full-time operator for $183,750, but also decreasing with a decrease in temporary wages and benefits. So that's why it's a net effect of zero for that. And on page 7, you'll see all the encumbrance carry forwards for purchase orders. These were the purchase orders for contracts that were outstanding as of December 31, is what you see there, and that totaled $274,662. That number that we saw in the beginning. I'll pause here before I go into the capital fund.
Council, you're seeing a lot of numbers put in front of you on our first budget amendment. So it comes to first reading next Monday, another work session, another second reading. So you have plenty of time to go through this. And if you have any aspects please contact Margarita personally to have her bring you through some of the numbers. This is quite voluminous in what you're doing. Thank you, Margarita, go ahead.
Okay. I think Ms. Therrien.
Ms. Therrien, go ahead.
With regard to the labor, is that a different labor than the one that we added at bedtime?
Yes, this would be an additional laborer, an additional operator.
Great, thank you.
What we found is it's cheaper to put in full-time versus the part-time. Same expenditure. And then what we're finding is they can only be part-time for 40 weeks. And now they're at 48 weeks. So we have to move them into full-time. So we came across that time frame also.
I tried to do that in a budget amendment. Thank you.
Ms. Sprinkle, thank you for trying that, Ms. Therrien, too. Thank you.
I am assuming wants to stay on as full-time. It's not like we have to go and find somebody else. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, fantastic.
Just to clarify, it's a temporary. They're actually temporary full-time, but they're temporary. But they can only work within a certain span of time. And then the city would move them. They would, beyond certain period of time, then they would have to receive benefits and everything. It's still permanent.
But that's the same person who's staying in that position. I don't need to train somebody new or anything like that, right?
Correct.
Okay, great. Thank you.
The capital fund, any questions there? I didn't confuse anyone with. On the capital fund, you'll see revenue. You'll see the transfer from the general fund. Of $4 million, the $500,000 transfer from the general fund for the fire department specific for apparatus, and then you'll see a slight decrease in transfer from the permanent fund. Under expenditures, these are the new additions to the budget.
Yes, Ms. Sprinkle.
Trying to catch my head in the right space here. The $4 million from general to capital, is that a number we are giving, or is that a number that has been preordained? I guess
that's a number that is proposed.
That's my number that I'm proposing to you.
$4 million. Okay. I just want to make sure.
But 1.5 million of that is per our policy would need to transfer, because that is the interest income and the sale of assets.
Sure. Sure.
That would be a requirement, but the balance of that is a recommendation.
That's what I wanted, is where that number came from. It's a recommendation. We can still talk about it.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
And I will change this and break out that $4 million so you can see what portion of that is coming through because of policy and what amount is coming through because of recommendation. Mm-hmm. On the expenditure side, these are changes to the budget. The $25,000 for the Golden Heart Plaza improvements, increasing that amount by $25,000. The other one, if you turn on the top of page 8, is $150,000 for increase for City Hall restrooms improvements. And the last one is a $10,000 increase for fire chief vehicle. And these are changes to the budget.
Is the 25 for the Golden Heart, is that the Portland Lou?
No, it's that area, yes. But what we found is my original budget was going to be 200,000. Then I cut it down to 150. And after talking with engineers and a few other things in regards to the scope of work for landscape architecture and things like that, and I'm just putting it back up to 175 total budget. That is not including the cost of the Portland Lou that's already been purchased. Yes?
When you put out a bid like that, do you give a cap to an estimate you're hoping to see, or do you let them give you the estimate and you walk back and do discussion?
You know, it's interesting. We didn't know where the numbers would come in at on the RFP for getting a landscape architecture. Mm-hmm. And we're not done with that yet. But just talking with Bob and Mike, it seemed like with the amount of the funds that would cost for hiring that person would be deficient in what we want to do at that park. So we're increasing it by 25. But whatever we do comes back to you for review and approval. Go ahead, Margarita.
Okay, those are the new additions to the budget. The next section is encumbrance carry forward for purchase orders. And you'll see the various departments totaling $3.8 million rounded. For property repair and replacement, it's $841,000. Public Works is $427,000, and I'm rounding. Garbage equipment is $849,000. And these are things that we're still waiting for equipments to come in or just projects to be completed. IT is $82,000. Police is $522,000. And those are vehicles that we're still waiting to come in. And then under the fire department, $1,065,000. And these are open purchase orders. Vendors have purchase orders in hand and are completing the orders. The next one, a reappropriation for prior year projects. I have on the budget that totals $1.3 million. And you'll note beside each item the amount of balance that they have in those projects. And that's basically or the amount that they're requesting that they need to complete the project. And the first one is our child care project. And that is the balance from an original budget of $750,000. The City Hall security system has a balance of $55,400 from a $250,000 project. And you'll see that we started the fire training center upgrades phase one project last year. And so we have some expenditures done, but we still have a balance there that we would like to use this year to complete the first phase one of that project. And then we have an increase for Fire Station 3 upgrades, which was $47,111. And notice that was a project of $300,000. On IT, they're asking for $20,000 balance. Under the fire department, $30,000 increase for grant match, and then road maintenance, bringing back in the committed amount for mini street construction of $669,000. So these are projects that you had approved in prior years, and departments would like to complete them in 2025. The last item is under the Transportation Center. There are three projects they would like to complete this year, totaling $270,000. The first one is to increase to install a turnstile exit door. They want it to be able to, you can get it out, but not back in. People are getting in. So it would be a turnstile where you can go out, but you can't use it to come back in, kind of for security to increase, and then $60,000 to increase for upgrading the heating panels and ceiling fan, and then $80,000 to improve the parking signs on 2nd and 3rd Avenue.
Ms. Sprinkle.
Looking at the mini street costs for the street that doesn't seem to get fixed. So, I mean, didn't we try to allocate money that was going to be spent in the year? Is this different somehow?
This is the Department of Transportation match for the mini street project. As the projects move into different phases, they completed the design. And from my understanding, it's going to go into construction this year on Mini Street. So once it hits a construction phase, the city is obligated to provide its match. And we thought that it would hit construction phase last year and we would have to provide that match, but that did not happen in 24. But I think it is slated to occur in 2025. But these are funds that the city committed when we agreed to the project.
Okay, but I just know that that's a new policy we're trying to work with, is designate money for a project that will be done over the year.
This is a slightly different, because when this is a part of the TIP or the STIP, and so when DOT has a project that's on there, they come to us and they say, here's your match agreement for the project. Yeah. We commit the funds at that time when the council approves to participate in that program. And so these funds were committed.
Is that not considered?
Years
it's not
ago.
Encumbered? It's not encumbered?
No, it's not encumbered. Okay. It's committed. Right. It's not encumbered until we provide the purchase order.
Thank
then
you.
Then it's encumbered.
One last question about the transportation center, $80,000 for parking signs. Why did I think fast planning was helping us with that, dollar-wise? Am I wrong? I thought they were funding the signage. It is? For the signage?
This is a different project. This is the neon signs for the parking garage.
Oh, okay.
It's not the parking, like all the different signs that Fast Planning helped put around the. It's not that. It's neon signs on the outside of the building. It's something that the Downtown Association has been pushing for a long time.
Okay, no, that's cool. That's great. I just want to make sure. Thank you. Yes. But I don't remember this.
This is going to be a long meeting, but when we're done, Mr. Clayworth, if you could stay for 10 minutes, so me, you, and Mr. Bob can talk about fast planning projects and funding. Yes, Mr. Marnie.
So how often do we look at fees, what we charge there at the parking garage? Is that a yearly project?
There is a board that consists of two. Well, it was two city employees, and that board discusses the fees. Any changes that they have, they bring their proposal to my attention. And now that we have, now that we have the finance committee, they'll take a look at it. But they have not proposed any changes, and for parking there.
For how long?
I think the last time that they increased it, and Mr. Clayworth might remember more than I do, I want to say it was 2-3 to 4 years ago they increased it.
Actually, Bob would probably be a better source, but there's several sources of revenue. One of the long-term contracts of the state of Alaska, the courthouse and stuff like that, and that's a contract that comes up, what, every 3 years, 5 years?
No, it's longer than that. The last contract was 10 years.
So you're negotiating a contract for 10 years at a time, which is kind of crazy. The day-to-day fees of people actually coming in and paying money, that's very minimal. It's mostly people like us that buy a space for a month.
And POGO.
And POGO, yeah. And that's your real sources of revenue. And those fluctuate, not a lot, but they have changed. And it's a flat rate now for the whole year. It used to be a different rate in the summer than in the winter, but that's set by their board. Talk to Bob about that.
Any other questions for Marguerite on the budget? Again, we're having two readings, another work session, and I encourage you, if you have any questions, talk to Marguerite personally, and she'll make herself available to you. Okay. Number 9, annual 2024 asset forfeiture fund report. Marguerite.
Per code, this is one area where the code states that we do not have to provide a formal budget, but we do have to inform the council of the fund and how much was spent and what it was spent on. So if you look at the page 1 of this equitable sharing agreement, it's a report that we have to file every year. For the asset forfeiture funds, you'll see in the first column it's for justice funds, and justice would be like FBI or DEA, and most of these are, if we receive funds, are from DEA. And we started the year with $63,169. We did receive $12,505 through the year, and that was for DEA sharing funds, and we had interest of $204, And we spent this year $36,109, and I do have the details of that attached to this report. So under justice funds, we now have a balance of $39,770. Under the treasury column, which is that second column there, this would be most of the time if we receive anything, it's through IRS, and it hasn't been for years. This fund is at, this account is at $1,133, and we earned interest of 74 cents, and now it's at $1,134, and that's rounding and treasury. And on the second page or on the back of it, you'll see what the police department, it can only be used for law enforcement, and they purchased building security upgrades, $26,275 total, and then they bought some sight and adapters for pistols, totaling $9,834, for a total of $36,109. So that's your annual report on asset forfeitures.
Any questions? Seeing none, we'll go to the Finance Committee report. Margarita, again.
I only have one item to announce there. The Finance Committee is scheduled to meet February the 27th. That's a Thursday at 7 a.m. in the Meeks Conference Room. That's all I have.
Okay, council member comments. We'll start with Ms. Therrien. Turn on your, we're not lip readers. Turn on your speaker. You're still off. There you go.
I'm sorry. I have no comment other than I'm looking forward to seeing y'all again.
Mr. Clayworth.
Nothing, thank you.
Ms. Sprinkle.
I'm going to say I appreciate the effort done to the budget changes, and thank you for the parking garage budget. I really appreciate that. I was going to ask about the U.S. Post Office meeting, but maybe I'll wait till Monday. Does that mean I should wait?
The Post Office meeting this Friday.
Okay.
It is postponed.
Okay, and to John, I just want to let you know, a dream is a wish your heart makes. Thank you.
We'll go to Mr. Ringstead after that.
Enough said.
Mr. Marnie.
Well, I don't want to keep us here longer. There's some things I want to talk about, but not the time.
Ms. Tidwell.
Just that I will be in Juneau on Monday, so I'll be zooming in.
Okay. Under mayor comments, we're looking at leasing a spot in the building department, an office, and we'll get the lease to you here. It has to be ratified by the 22nd of February. And it's just a small little office to the Denali Commission. And we're looking at $1,000 per month. So something else we're doing. That's my report. Mr. Clearworth, you want to bring us into executive session?
I move we go into executive session, discuss one item. FFU, labor negotiations.
Is there a second? Okay, we'll take a 3-minute break and come on back for executive session. Thank you, everyone.
City Council met in executive session, discussed one item, firefighters negotiations, and no action formal. What is the correct term on that? No formal direction.
I would say direction was given to staff and no action was taken.
There you go.
Okay, motion to adjourn.